What's the most important information you need to know about the Boise State Broncos? We asked their insider on today's show.
Ready to make this football season unforgettable? Sign up for BetMGM and check out all the exciting new ways you can get off the sidelines and into the game. Kick off the football weekend the right way with BetMGM's legendary Thursdays. Take advantage of football promos all throughout the week, like no sweat tokens on Thursdays, boost packs on Sundays, and our ultimate team's free-to-play game on Mondays. BetMGM is keeping the action going all throughout football season. Don't miss a moment. It's all here. BetMGM. Make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome in to the Odds and Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Preem. Eric Scopel on the show as always. And today from Bronco Nation News, we bring on publisher BJ Raines to get you up to speed on the Boise State Broncos ahead of the season opener for both teams. Saturday, 12:30, Austin Stadium. Games on CBS or Paramount. BJ, man, how's it going? How's your summer? Are you ready for football?
Yeah, going great. Always love talking to my 24/7 family here, so I appreciate you guys for having me on. And yeah, tired of – told my wife this morning, actually, I was cutting some Dan Lanning audio for my show, and I said, man, it's so nice to actually have opposing team sound bites and things to talk about and actually having a game to prepare for. It's definitely tired of covering practice, so it's going to be fun.
Fall camp is always a grind, and everyone's excited for game day, right? And I think in Boise, probably everyone's a little bit more excited, especially because of the season moving to the Pac-12. How has that move to the league changed maybe the perception within Boise, within the greater Idaho area, the fan base, the interest, the excitement for the program, the school? How have you kind of seen this transition happened for you?
I think that the fans wish it was the headline came, you know, 5-6 years ago, yeah, and it was a different looking Pac-12. Cause I mean, that was always the goal, was to try to be in the same conference as in Oregon and USC and UCLA and Washington and everybody. So I think from that standpoint, a little bittersweet, like it's the Pac-12 that they always wanted to get in, but it's not really the Pac-12 they always wanted to get in, cause it's not at all the same team. So, is it better than the Mountain West? Sure. I mean, they trimmed off obviously some dead weight at the bottom, you know, in just terms of some San Jose's and Wyoming's and things like that. But you know, from a football standpoint, you know, certainly the teams you have in the conference are great. But I think from a basketball standpoint, they're really excited just because of getting Gonzaga and all the teams that are in there. So I think they're excited. It's going to be cool. Certainly a new league, new change. There's a lot of excitement. They got a new North End Zone opening up, for the home opener next week. So a lot of change and things around the department, but certainly a little bittersweet, I would say, just because it's a better league than they were in, but it's not the Pac-12 that they've always wanted to get in.
Maybe you've already answered it and you've used the word bittersweet, so you probably don't feel this way, but does this benefit Boise's chances to be a regular CFP team, or do you think it is kind of the status quo in terms of moving from Mountain West to Pac-12?
No, I think it'll help a little bit. Certainly, I mean, like I said, I think the strength of schedule is going to go up. I mean, you know, that you're not playing the Nevadas of the world and some of these teams that San Jose and Wyoming, like I said, and I know New Mexico is on a nice run right now, but and Air Force is kind of up and down sometimes. But, you know, you're certainly aligning yourself, and I think long-term you feel like Oregon State and Washington State will be able to get it going and compete, you know, in this league. And I think the verdict's still kind of out on Texas State. I know they've had some good seasons, but kind of just a random team thrown in there from Texas. So, I think overall just the name, the brand, the coaches claim it's definitely helped in recruiting and stuff. And so just because kids still know that Pac-12 name and brand, you know, when they're in high school and stuff. So, it definitely didn't hurt. I think, you know, just from like a micro standpoint, like I still wish they would have got into with ESPN with the league, just because they got a lot of these random networks like USA and CW, and like they claim, oh, CW is in 100% of homes and all that, and it's great. But I've never once like said, oh, let's go see what game's on the CW. So like I think, just as you guys know, like, yeah, and I know the Big Ten like doesn't have, I don't think, a deal with ESPN maybe either, but it just seems like if you want to be somebody, you know, you got to be have ESPN talking about you. And I don't think they care much about the Pac-12 or the Mountain West. Certainly didn't talk much Mountain West last year when they didn't have it. So we'll see what the TV package ends up being. They claim it's for more money. They claim it's a better deal. It definitely doesn't hurt, but I don't know if it's like just some massive difference given how the league's a little watered down as what they compared to what it was, you know, 5 years ago.
I think this is year three where Oregon has not been a regular on ESPN, and it still does not feel normal to me. The Oklahoma State game is on ESPN this season, but that's because they're at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, they got Western Michigan, I think. Boise's got one game too, yeah.
Yeah, and it just feels different. It doesn't feel right. So you're right there of you got to be on ESPN in some capacity.
Well, I mean, Oregon's a lot of games on CBS,
it's like a big deal.
Oregon will still get talked about on ESPN, but the group of five, group of 16 conferences, like you, if they don't have a deal with you, they really don't care about you. So I think Oregon doesn't really have anything to worry about, but certainly the Boise States of the world, if they're having a great season and you want to get talked about on College Game Day, unless you have an Ashton Jeanty again, they're probably not picking your game on the ticker or whatever at the end of the show. So.
For sure. All right, let's transition to this team this season. Madsen's back, multi-year starter at quarterback. He played in that 2024 game against Oregon where Boise almost pulled off the upset inside Autzen Stadium. What's just kind of the feelings around him this year opposed to 2024? Because I think 2024 was maybe his first full-time year as a starter, if I remember right. What's just the vibe around him and the feeling that he'll carry or the expectations of running the offense with him?
Yeah, we actually talked to him today with the media availability, and yeah, that was his third career start when he went up there 2 years ago. Because that was actually game two for Boise State. They had played a road game at Georgia Southern the week before, and then he had started one game the year before. But yeah, pretty much a brand new starter last year, and now to be the starter for two full years since. Missed a couple games last year due to injury, but you know, now this will be the fourth year in which he started at least one game. So experienced guy. It's funny because, you know, I would say polarizing is a little too strong of a word, but in Boise, like, you know, 90% of the fans love him and 10% of the fans just can't stand him because, you know, he's great against like the teams they should beat and teams in the Mountain West level, like he's very good against, but he really struggles against the Power Four opponents that he's played in his career. I think he's, you know, his numbers in five games against the Power Four teams, he's like barely 50% completions, three touchdowns to five interceptions, and Boise State's 0-5, you know, when he started. And again, we're talking about Oregon was top 10, right. Penn State in the Fiesta Bowl was top 10. They had to play at Washington. They played Washington in a bowl game. They played UCLA in a bowl game. Like, he's had some tough teams to play against, right. But I would say he's a very solid veteran quarterback. He's a team captain this year, a leader. Certainly is going to be better than how he was a couple years ago. And he'll take off and run if he has to. He'll try to make some throws, but he's not the biggest. He's not the strongest. He's not the most athletic-looking, you know, quarterback out there. And so solid quarterback for Boise State. I think he could have probably gone in the portal and made money, a lot more money to go somewhere else, but has not fared well in his career against the Power Four teams, which is neither has Spencer Danielson for that matter. And that's a big talking point, I guess, going into this game here in town.
One of the things that you think historically with Boise State is just the running back tradition. And it's really impressive. Jeanty's the name you hear about probably now, but you go back a decade and there's a handful of guys that had, you know, professional careers of some sort, some that were more extensive than others. Rest in peace, one of those with Doug Martin, who passed away tragically very recently. Where do you stack up Dylan Riley and Sire Gaines amongst that? And like, are they deserving of consideration amongst some of those elite players that Boise's had at the running back position?
Oh, I think they both have a chance to get drafted at some point. And they're both, I think, I know Dan Lanning said they could play for any team on their schedule. And I don't think that's kind of coach speak at this point. I mean, Dylan Riley, first full season last year, you know, is kind of one of the main guys, got over 1,000 yards last year. Sire Gaines got over 800 yards last year, and they're both back, and they just complement each other very well. Gaines is a little more of the power back. It's not even fair to say, because, you know, to say he's a short yardage guy when you rush for 800 and something yards, but I mean, he's a guy that they may use in like a fourth and one, third and one, but certainly can get outside and do some things. And then Riley is a little more of the speed, you know, back, but both those guys have the ability to do any, you know, go the distance on any play, and the way they use them and complement them. And we even saw, you know, a picture that Boise State posted, because you guys, you know, your guys' practice rules are, but we can't say anything about formations and all that, but Boise State posted a picture to their Twitter account after one of the practices, and they had both backs on the field in a formation together. So we'll see if they use that much this year or what, but yeah, both those guys I think the kind of, you know, minimum is they'd like to try to get both those guys to 1,000 this year. And they're talking together about trying to, you know, do what Jenty did by himself, you know, the year before in 2024. So, and even the two guys they brought in behind him, they brought in two power four transfers, Jules Goff from Pitt and Harry Stewart from Kansas, both put up numbers, you know, in reserve roles at previous spots. So you're going to see other backs in there as well. And certainly they're going to lean on the run, you know, on the road, this atmosphere, they're going to try to control the clock a little bit. So to have any kind of chance in this game, they're going to need both those guys to run the football and run the football well. But I think that both of them are in for a heck of a year. And in this day and age, guys, to get both those guys to come back to Boise State is almost unheard of. I mean, either one of those guys could have gone much bigger and made much more money. And for both of them to take way less money and take a less role to come back and split carries at Boise State says a lot about what they think of Boise State and Spencer Danielson and this program. But, yeah, Boise State feels really lucky to have both those guys, and I think they're both going to be in for pretty big seasons.
To follow up real quick on Gaines, I remember watching – the Georgia Southern game the week before, and he exploded on the scene. I think as a true freshman, he had like two touchdowns, over 100 yards. It was almost like a 10 yard per carry average, if I remember right. Did he get hurt that year? Because he didn't play much the rest of the year, or was it just kind of they're going to play him for three games and then?
No, I think it was the very next game after the Oregon game. He suffered like a season-ending injury. So he was a true freshman, you're right, rushed for over 100. Once they pulled Jenty, he came in and still rushed for over 100 yards himself on like nine carries or something. And so, yeah, they were super excited about him. And then the very next game, I think after Oregon, like Portland State or somebody, he suffered like a high ankle sprain or something and was done for the season. So he came back last year and was supposed to be the guy. And here's this true freshman, I guess, you know, Dylan Riley's thrown into the mix, and he was a young guy and ended up having a big season. And then now, you know, they're both there together. So, I mean, they didn't give out Pac-12, you know, preseason awards or whatever, but like, I know like one of my buddies that hosts a show with me says he would have had Sire Gaines as the preseason Pac-12 player of the year, even though he had the less rushing yards last year than Riley. So yeah, Gaines is a heck, like I said, you see, I mean, you shake his hand. First of all, if you're not ready, it's so firm. And I mean, it hurts you to shake his hand because he's as firm as can be, but you see him warming up on the sidelines and just, he's just a chiseled dude. And he's, like I said, he's more of the power guy, but he still has plenty of speed, and he might be and probably is the better NFL prospect. And so, yeah, Riley's getting a lot of the love for having a little better numbers last year, but Gaines is right there, and in some people's eyes is actually better. So I think they feel really good about both those guys.
Let's maybe shift over a little bit to the defensive side of the football. I know we haven't seen games yet, but who do you kind of anticipate – being kind of like the game wreckers, the game changing guys, that are there NFL guys that are on this roster defensively that regardless of Oregon needs to match up well against them, but they're just going to be guys to know. Like you need to pay attention to these guys for the scope.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Lanning was asked about Jaden Virgin Morgan, and he's certainly the top NFL draft prospect, probably on the whole team, but certainly on the defense. And he's another guy that I think Oregon actually may have been one of the teams that would have loved to have had him a year or two ago and may have even tried to get him a year or two ago. He had a lot of opportunities to leave and decided to stay at Boise State, not once, but twice. And, you know, he was going up against, you know, he had Ahmed Hassanin, who just made the Detroit Lions roster, was kind of opposite him a couple years ago. And then he took over as kind of the main guy by himself last year and was getting more of the double teams and things like that, and didn't have quite the numbers maybe that some had expected last year. But he came back, and I think he's primed for a big season. He's got the size. He's got all the measurables and things you look at when it comes to a you know, edge rusher off the edge. So I would say Jaden Virgin Morgan for sure is the main guy. But they've got a Notre Dame transfer at corner in Jaden Mickey, who's, you know, going to step in as a team leader and a likely starter this year after kind of being in a end up starting some games, but maybe wasn't a full-time starter last year. Now he gets his opportunity, and he's one of the guys there in the secondary that I would say. And it's funny, they lost a safety to LSU in a transfer, and then they lost another safety who's in an NFL camp right now with the Browns, and then they lost both their corners. And a lot of people think that the secondary could be better this year than it was last year, just because of some of the guys that were waiting for their opportunity to take over. So I think it's just that maybe you know, some of the parts is going to be greater. I don't know if they individually have like a star back there, but I guess I would say Bowen Phelps at linebacker. He's a little undersized, so to speak, but kind of that new age linebacker where you're kind of quicker and maybe not quite as big, and they don't, you know, not as many guys wearing the neck roll or whatever. You know, you get these quicker guys out there, and that's kind of what Boise State's gone to at linebacker, where these guys look a little undersized, but they can cover better in space and move a little better. And Bowen Phelps was third on the team in tackles last year, a former walk-on that really emerged last year, that they're really expecting to be one of those kind of team leaders there in the middle at linebacker.
Did Phelps start at safety? Is that what I read originally and then moved to linebacker?
I believe so, yeah. And like I said, he was a walk-on as well. So I think he's kind of emerged and found a new spot. And yeah, he's not small. I mean, when you look at Sam, he's a linebacker, you know, for Boise State size. But when you see him compared to some linebackers, he's not your typical, you know, 240-pound guy or whatever. But he certainly is one of their best players in the middle of the defense there for sure.
Where do you think the strengths and the weaknesses on the deep? And you maybe have already answered some of that, but where do you think that is for this team going into the 26th?
Well, I mean, I would say the one area that they're trying to improve is get more pressure on the quarterback. 2 years when they made the CFP, they led the nation with the year they played Oregon. They led the nation with 55 sacks last year, or that year on defense. Last year, that number was almost cut in half, all the way down to 27 sacks. From the year before. And the coaching staff says, well, we played Air Force, we played some different teams, it was different schemes, we were game management in terms of when teams were throwing versus running, you know. And so I get some of that, but when you go from 55 to 27 sacks in back-to-back seasons, like, there's something that changed there. And I know they lost some key players, but they're certainly trying to get back to that, get more pressure on the quarterback, get more sacks. And also, guys, last year they were literally the second worst tackling team in America, according to all the PFF numbers. I think they were 135 out of 136 qualified teams or whatever in terms of the PFF tackling numbers. So they were not a very good tackling team last year. In the season opener last year at South Florida, just had so many missed tackles and led to big plays, and they end up losing that game. So they did a lot more live tackling in the spring than pretty much any team does. I mean, they went live like almost every day. They were in pads in the spring, and they went live multiple times here during fall camp, just because they just said, you know what, like, it's football, guys are going to get hurt, we can't really worry about that, we have to improve our tackling, and the only way you can improve your tackling is by working on tackling. So we asked Coach Danielson on Monday, like, in the defensive coordinator Eric Chenander, like, did it work, are you a better tackling team? And they're like, well, you know, we think so, but we won't really know until that game against Oregon. So the tackling is a big one that struggled last year, and they are very hopeful that the offseason work on tackling will pay off in a big way come Saturday.
Mona Tuioti, obviously the name is a familiar name for Oregon. His dad is defensive line coach. His older brother's the edge, starting edge for the Ducks. It's kind of the expectations for Mona over at Boise State. To be honest with you, I'm a little surprised Oregon didn't offer him a scholarship. Watching him at Shelton High School, which was here in Eugene, played both ways, was a stud, just small. But I just figured he's probably going to find his way on Oregon's roster in some capacity. Didn't, and seemed like he played well last year. What's just kind of his story and the expectations this season?
Yeah, it's funny. The two guys you asked about specifically, the two guys we talked to him today as well, and said, yeah, it's funny. He's moved a lot, but we asked him, you know, what's your hometown? What do you consider? Because on the roster, it says Eugene, Oregon as his hometown. And he's like, yeah, I lived there about 3 years. I guess I'll call that my hometown, like, from his sophomore year of high school on, and talked about going to all those games there. And yeah, I mean, it's, you got the dad, the brother, I believe there's another brother on the coaching staff also as well. And so there's, you know, multiple connections there. And so, yeah, I mean, he had a pretty solid, true freshman season last year. I think had two fumble recoveries, you know, did some things coming in, and he's, you know, he had talked about his dad being the defensive line coach and the fact that he's just not big enough. You know, he's like 5'10". So he kind of ended up making it at linebacker. But yeah, he's going to be in the mix there for sure. I mentioned Bowen Phelps. They had a Kansas transfer, Logan Brantley, that's in the mix, a returner in Jake Ripp, a couple young guys. But every time you ask about the rotation at linebacker, he's the name the coaches bring up. So he may not be a starter, but he'll definitely play on Saturday. He's in on some special teams as well, and he'll definitely be in the mix and get some linebacker snaps. They're expecting a lot of the spots on defense to really rotate and play different guys. And he's one of the guys that they really like. And it's interesting hearing him talk about his love for Oregon and all the connections over there. And yet here he is in year two at Boise State. So I guess in this day and age, you never know, you know, if he's here the whole time or not, or what'll happen. But for this year, he's here, and Boise State's excited to have him. And I think he's got a bright future and should have a much bigger role this year compared to last year.
Let's dive into some like kind of keys for the game, BJ. Can you give me just a thing on each side of the ball you think is crucial for Boise State to maybe surprise some people pulling upset on Saturday?
Well, I mean, the obvious one for Boise State on offense, they have to be able to run the football. Like, they're not built for Maddox Mattson to throw, you know, 50 times. Like, you have to get, you know, yardage on first and second down. And when you're in third down, they're going to have to be in third and two, third and three. You know, if they're in third and six and beyond and they're forcing Maddox Mattson to have to just make a ton of big throws, I don't know how much you like that because, you know, we didn't really talk about it, but they've got a rebuilt wide receiver group this year. They've brought in some transfers. They've got a freshman that's starting at wide receiver. So like they've got, they feel good about the group, but it's a lot of unproven kind of guys that are coming from other spots. And so, you know, I think that putting this game in Maddox Madsen's hands is probably not the best scenario. I mean, he's, like I said, he's a solid quarterback, but he's just this offense is not built for him to be the reason that just wins them games. They need to be able to run the football and then let him make some kind of throws and use his feet to extend plays and things when he needs to. So I would say stay ahead of the chains, be able to run the football, and then they can't turn the ball over. Obviously, field position is going to be a big key in this game. They cannot turn the ball over. They've got to, you know, play the field position battle, eat some clock, run the football, and just avoid some of those devastating plays. I mean, when they played at Notre Dame last year, they were about to go into the half, you know, with a lead against Notre Dame almost, and just had a couple boneheaded kind of plays and some turnovers and basically. You know, gave them, you know, shot themselves in the foot in terms of having a chance to win that game. So hang on to the football, run the football, play the field position, play the clock game. And then on defense, I think they got to get some turnovers. I mean, they've got to find a way, whether it's, you know, sacks, strip sacks, you know, fumbles, interceptions, whatever, they've got to find a way to create some turnovers, create some extra possessions for their offense. And like I said, they've got to get Oregon maybe behind the chains a little bit, try to get some negative plays, get them in third and long situations and kind of just slow them down a little bit. If Oregon, they'll kind of talk this week as if Oregon gets rolling, you know, offensively with their tempo and everything else, and they get their confidence rolling, you know, it's just going to be tough to ever slow them down. So I would say a quick start, try to get the lead, try to get the crowd out of it a little bit if you can. And then just, like I said, try to just continue to make things as difficult as they can for them. I know the offensive line's a little rebuilt over there, and they've got some veteran guys returning on the defensive line for Boise State. So maybe they can get some pressure on Dante Moore and try to create a fumble or two or an interception or something. But I mean, these are all keys that maybe to hope keep the game within 10 points. I don't know if these are all keys, you know, for a 24 point spread here. It'd be a pretty massive upset, but you know, this is, guys, the highest ranked team Boise State's ever played. I mean, you think about Boise State and their history and the Fiesta Bowls, and they've played in these Chick-fil-A kickoffs in the preseason, and they've beaten Georgia and Florida State. And you know, you go down the line with all these teams they've played, the Oklahomas of the world and stuff, but the highest ranked team they've ever played is number three. So this will be, you know, in some ways the biggest regular season game in the history of this program here. And so it's a massive game for them, a massive opportunity, but obviously it's going to be a big time challenge.
I know it's been 9 years, but they're also, they have beaten Oregon, and they actually have a winning record against Oregon. So I don't think this program's going to come in scared. I mean, that Dan Lanning called them an identity program, and it's all the same traits that you, all three of us, have kind of grown up watching them play with. And those were what he described of sound football, run the game. They do a lot of motions. They really test your rules of your schemes and all of that, and well coached. We'll get you out with this, BJ. Just obviously a win would be huge. But what are you looking for, regardless of win or lose, to just feel confident about, yeah, they're going to have a season that we think they're going to have?
Well, I mean, I think the 24.5 point spread, a lot of people in Boise just were a little puzzled to see it quite that high. I mean, I think it was like 17 or something 2 years ago. But I think people just like, I mean, a lot of people are talking about Boise State being a playoff team this year.
Yeah.
And 24.5, you know, just seems a little high to a lot of people. And I don't think they're taking it as disrespect or chip on their shoulder or anything like that. They're just a little surprised, like, wow, people think it's going to be that big of a game. So certainly staying with inside that number and just trying to keep this a respectable score and game, I think it would be the case, because you know, their home opener next week is against Memphis, and Memphis just got that big win at UNLV the other night. And so Memphis is coming in now as a challenge. And if Boise State, you know, wants to be a CFP team here, they're going to obviously have to win game two against Memphis. So it'd be a huge opportunity for them, would obviously give them a huge leg up. But I think big picture, they just want to show that they can hang you know, in some capacity with a team like Oregon, keep it somewhat respectable, not get anybody hurt. And then, like I said, you know, I think every other game on their schedule, you know, which by the way, this is the hardest schedule probably metric, you know, in Boise State history, because they have Memphis coming at home. Then they're at Western Michigan, who won the MAC last year. And then when the new Pac-12 schedule is certainly tougher than it's been. So they will still probably be favored or close to favorites in every game the rest of the season. They're at Fresno, which will be a little tough. They're at Washington State. But I think it's just, hey, show that with the number two or number one, or I mean, obviously one of the elite teams in all of college football, can you hang and compete on the road and at least keep it respectable? And if they can do that and not lose like, you know, 55-3 or something, then I think that people will be excited about the rest of the season and definitely that home opener against Memphis.
He is BJ Raines. You can follow him at Bronco Nation News for the 24/7 Sports Boise site. Great work as always. BJ, thanks for coming on the show, giving us the insight. We'll definitely catch up with you in the press box this weekend.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I'm glad for the – happy for the day game. I'm tired. I don't know about you guys, but Boise State seemingly plays like 8 p.m. every night, and you're just sitting around your hotel room all day to cover a game. So I'm super pumped. I'm actually going to try to find a late flight Saturday night maybe and even get home and get an off day or something on Sunday. So we'll see. But I'm pumped to wake up, go watch some football, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, BJ.
Thanks, guys.
Out of the shadows of Paramount Mountain, three heroes level up. Axe, Tyrus, and Gilius battle against the evil giant Death Adder to save the kingdom of Uria from so much peril. Laser knives, ornery dwarves, bad brothers, sentient skeletons, sword scorpions, death armor, fire, in this thing, that thing, whatever that is, so much peril and heroes.
This is just the beginning of the story of Hampton Square.
Golden Axe, new series streaming September 16th on Paramount+.